Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now, I'm joined now by Aidan Shields and by Sharon and Paul Askin. Good afternoon, everybody.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And you all have a big anniversary coming up in 2 weeks, because it'll be 50 years since the Dublin and Monaghan bombings. And, of course, dozens of people were killed that day. But among them, Aidan, was your mother, and Sharon and Paul, your father. And you've all taken part now in a new 6-part series about the bombings and their aftermath. It's called The Forgotten. It starts at 6:30 this Tuesday evening here on RTE Radio 1. Aidan, can I come to you first?
Sure.
Your dad, Leo, worked in Guiney's clothes shop on Talbot Street in Dublin. So your mother, Maureen, went in to surprise him as he was closing up that evening. What happened?
Well, obviously, you know, there was no mobile phones or the like back in 1974, 50 years ago. She worked in Fairview, and he worked in Guiney's and Talbot Street. She had only started work about 1972, after we had all... I was finished school. I have two sisters, Trace and Fiona. They were ready to go into secondary school. Fiona, the youngest, and the middle girl, Teresa, then was in secondary school. So she got a part-time job with the local building company, doing books and wages. So they'd finish early on a Friday, so she decided to go in and surprise Daddy, because there was a bus strike, which you're aware of probably, at the time. So we never had a car until she started work around 1972. First car we ever had, blue Vauxhall Viva, I remember it well. So she drove in, parked the car in Gardiner Street, just around the corner from Guiney's. Would have walked up the 30, 40 yards up to Guiney's. And, well, that was the mistake she made, unfortunately. Well, not the mistake she made, but,
you know. The second bomb went off just outside Guiney's, didn't it?
Just right outside. Well, there are two Guiney's. There's 79 Talbot Street and 16 Talbot Street. He did work in 79, which was the big Guiney's. If you're walking up towards O'Connell Street, it's on the one on the left-hand side. It's the building is still there, derelict Guiney's there. It's closed now. But he worked there for a number of years up in the ready-mades department. But he had moved over to what used to be known as Little Guiney's, and was working there. And the bomb was actually on that side of the street. And she would have been close.
Your dad would have been kind of...
in the shop.
Inside.
He had literally pulled the shutters down on the shop. He was the manager over in Little Guiney's. He'd have pulled the shutters down at maybe 25, 28 minutes past, and the bomb was 29 minutes past 5.
So, and your mother was on
she
the
would
bomb
have been outside to
out the shutters.
Yeah.
So as you say, you were 19, and you were still living at home, your two younger sisters. So you find out initially that your dad is okay.
He phoned to say he was okay, but then he had to be told that there was no sign of Mammy. And she would normally have been home at that stage because, well, obviously she wasn't going to be home that day because she was going in to collect him. She might not have been due till 6 o'clock-ish. But, of course, nobody knew anything about either of them until after 6 o'clock, till the news. Now, some people had heard explosions. We found out from the 6 o'clock news that there was 3 bombs in Dublin. Later on, one in Monaghan. But
so then, presumably, you're getting a growing worry about your mother. Then,
yeah.
Did you go looking for her? Or?
Well, nobody went looking for her until sort of maybe 8 o'clock-ish. And myself and one of the wives of the men that Mammy worked for, she had formerly been a nurse. So she and I went into town, visited as many of the hospitals as we could. And of course, there was mayhem because there was 300 people injured, apart from the 34, well, 27 in Dublin and 7 in Monaghan who were killed. But we got no positive result from any of the hospitals. So we came home. At that stage now, then a lot of neighbours were worried about, because the word was on the street that, you know, initially everybody was asking, is Leo, my father, is he okay? Because they all knew he worked in gynaecs, not knowing anything, but eventually they did know, of course. So I came home and just informed them that there was no sign of Mammy in any of the hospitals. So about 10 o'clock then it must have been, or maybe, the timeline is a little bit, you know, because at that stage, nobody was looking at their watch, so somebody said while we were there, there's only one place left to look. So, yeah, myself and herself went in.
To the morgue.
To City Morgue, Angel, on, yeah. And, well, I had to give a description of Mammy, what she might be wearing, what jewellery she might, 19 years of age, like, what the hell, you know. I couldn't have told you what I was wearing, never mind what my mother might have been wearing, you know. Anyway, they got enough information, and I was brought into the morgue. Nobody really wants to know what that was like.
Yeah.
So.
And you have to go home and tell your dad.
I had to come home and tell the masses at home that I'd found her.
Okay. All right, I want to come back to the rest of your story in a minute,
Aidan,
but I just want to bring in Paul and Sharon. Like, one of the things listening to Aidan there is that it's the banality of the day. It was just this ordinary day, people doing ordinary things. So the three bombs went off in Dublin around 5:30. So then it was 7:02 that evening, the fourth bomb in Monaghan town. Like, Paul, you were 5.
Yeah.
At home with your mother.
Yeah.
Completely banal, ordinary day, waiting for dad to come home. Your house was 6 miles from Monaghan, and you remember hearing the bomb, do you?
Yeah, we heard it was like a clap of thunder, and the window shook in the kitchen. And then the news flash came on that there was a bomb went off in Monaghan, and first thing was, says, oh, your father, because he wasn't home. And she dropped us off down to the neighbours and got a lift into Monaghan. And I think we stayed in the neighbour's house that night. We didn't know what was going on, or never heard maybe till the next day. Father, he survived for 6 hours in the hospital. Well, when mother went down, the ones said, your father's all right, Paddy's all right. He's helping ones, helping the injured. But he wasn't. He was one of the injured, and he died shortly afterwards.
Sharon, your mother told you later, didn't she, when you got older, about that trip to the hospital that day and what happened?
Yeah, she went down that night, and as Paul says, she was tucked in and she says, oh no, Paddy's fine, he is helping. And then I think somebody took her into the room where he was, and she says it was an awful sight. She says, like, where the impact of the bomb had hit him, the whole side of his body was unrecognisable. So it was, and I think to the day she died, I don't think that picture ever left her. You know,
really,
it must have been horrific. It's probably the worst day she's ever had.
Yeah. So, Paul, do you remember much about that few days? Do you remember your dad's funeral?
Well, we weren't at the funeral. We were at the bottom of the lane, you know, down from the house. When the funeral went past, we weren't actually at the grave side or nothing, or the mass. And then the cousin looked after us that day. You know.
Yeah.
Can't really remember much, but you can remember bits of it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I presume, yeah, not knowing what's going on, yeah. Really. Like, yeah. Yeah. And so, Sharon, you were only two. Do you so you've no memory of your father?
No, myself and my sister have no memory whatsoever. We have actually one photograph with him. That was only in the 70s. Not everybody had a camera.
Yeah.
So we have one photograph and we were babies in it. I have no actual physical memory of.
And I presume, even though you never knew him, that's a big hole in your life always.
Yeah, funny. It's one of the things I was thinking. I said, like, it's hard to miss something you never really had. But at times, it was a big miss out of the family, like my sister's wedding, my brother's wedding.
Yeah.
It's like, we never had any memory whatsoever. But at the same time, you're sitting going, well, if he had been here, it would have been, he'd have been walking my sister down the aisle and everything. Instead of my brother, but it is a hard thing to think of because, like, you know, you never miss what you never had.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In that instance, you really did.
Yeah. Was the bombing talked about much when you were growing up?
No.
No.
No. Never.
Really.
Like myself and Sonny didn't really know anything about it until I'd say we were in our early teens. Mum wouldn't talk about it at all, and it was never talked about in the media. Yeah. You know, it was truly forgotten about. It was sort of brushed under the carpet.
And did you know how your dad had died? Like, do you remember having an awareness of that?
We just had an awareness that he was dead. We were never sat down and told what actually happened.
Yeah.
It was just the fact that he wasn't there, that he had passed away.
Paul, Sharon said about your mother and what she saw in the hospital that day and everything. Is it the kind of thing that someone ever gets over, something like that? Did your mother ever?
No, mother was never. She's never got over it, even though she never talked about it.
Yeah.
No, she never got over it. She always, well, she talked about father, how much she loved him, but never talked about what happened or what's going to happen next. You just got on with Rare and us. And
yeah, get on with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And you moved to Armagh then, and that would have been the middle of the troubles and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you tempted to join the IRA? Like, did you feel a need for vengeance or anything?
No, I wouldn't say I was tempted. I had plenty of opportunity.
Yeah.
But no, I wouldn't take that up. It's live and let live, you know. People's entitled to live and live their lives without being under threat. That's my views.
Yeah. And that's comes from your own experience.
Yeah.
You
know, we weren't brought up that road, Catholic or Protestant or anything like that. Made no difference.
Yeah. Aidan, do you remember the days after that? You do, of course. Do you remember your mother's funeral?
Oh, I do, yeah. It was huge funeral, yeah. Of course, media involvement as well. There was cameras there and all that. But there was a huge guard of honour from the girls' schools. All the pupils had a guard of honour outside the church. And, yeah, it was big.
Your dad didn't live that long after that.
22 months afterwards he
Do you
died.
Think it broke him?
Oh, yeah. He was, well, I always said he died of a broken heart. Yeah, he kind of never got over it. He never went back to Talbot Street after that. He couldn't. You see, he came out of the shop and came home. He'd have walked by his wife, not knowing.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have recognised her anyway. I mean, that's. But yeah, he walked by not knowing that she was there. And when he realised that, he didn't realise that till maybe a day or two afterwards, when we found the car in Gardiner Street. And obviously, I can't remember now if she had told somebody that she was going in to collect him. But, I mean, obviously she was there. That's where she was, was, you know, so.
And what about you? Were you a different person after that?
Well, yeah, you're all, it shakes you up, you know. I mean, yeah, it was never the same.
Yeah.
It can't be, you know.
And your sisters?
Hard for the girls. I was 19, 20, 21 when he died, like, and I was working. The girls were still in college, still in school. Like, I have to get a call in for my aunts and uncles who rallied powerfully to keep us all on the straight and narrow and organised for the two girls to be set up in college. Teresa went to college in Limerick. Fiona went to boarding school in Thurles. I was left home alone. I got married 4 years after that, so, you know. I'm still living in the house. Come September, I'll be 70 years living in the same house. So, I know I only look 50. Sorry. I'm still living in.
Aidan, did the family get much support from the, you know, the government, the authorities? I don't know. These days now, you feel there'd be grief counsellors would come in.
Even Sharon's laughing at that. I mean, Brendan, you must be joking. It's an absolute disgrace the way we were treated. You asked a question there a moment ago of Paul and Sharon, like, what sort of support or what, you know, happened afterwards and when they had to move to Armagh. I mean, we were just, the mentality at the time was, it has happened now. Can't say what SH has happened.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Get on with life. That's what we were told.
Really?
Just get on. You can't do anything about it. Just get on with life.
You're nodding there, Sharon. Was it the same for you? Was there any kind of support offered?
Mum had four children under 10. She had a set of twins at 2 years old and she got no help whatsoever at all from any. No support given. I think we were offered counselling 30 years after the event. And I sort of says, well, you're a wee bit late with that. It was shocking.
Yeah.
I can remember Mum actually saying that Daddy used to go over every Sunday and donate to St. Vincent de Paul. Without fail, he'd been over there before going into Mass. And she says, afterwards, they didn't even offer her a bag of spuds or a bag of coal. They didn't even knock her door. So it wasn't just the government.
Yeah.
There was a lot of places that sort of let everybody down.
Yep.
So there was.
And it, like, when you talk about your mother now and the fact that she never really spoke about it or anything, she was in what we now recognise as deep trauma, wasn't she? Like, she needed help, of all kinds. Yeah.
But typical Irish woman, she got up and got on with it. She had her children to put out and that was it.
So aside from the 50th anniversary, it's a big year ahead for you guys and for all the family. So the Northern Ireland Police Ombudsman is expected to publish its investigation of collusion allegations. There's a separate British investigation originally led by John Boucher. That's due to be released later this year. Do you feel like you're getting closer to the truth emerging, do you think, Paul?
I think the truth is still as far away as it was back in 1974.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Well, they keep denying anything about collusion and that we have no evidence that supports that there was collusion.
While seeming to say equally that there probably was, isn't it? There seems to be this suggestion. They kind of say, yeah, it's likely there was, but there's no evidence.
There's no way that we can prove it. But they have all the proof, but they won't give it to us.
So what would you like to see and what would you like to know?
The truth, for a start. Just hold your hands up and admit, you know, yeah, we're done wrong. And we're sorry for what we've done. That's a start.
Yeah. Would an apology mean a lot to all of you, Aidan?
Oh, sure. Look, I'm from Living Artane, and we just recently had the apology to the Stardust. They waited 43 years for that apology. We're waiting 50 years. I mean, for God's sake, you talk about the Operation Denton, Operation Newham, Steak Knife, all of those, John Boucher. Now, I don't know what the John Boucher or Ian Livingston now, who's looking after the investigation, I don't know what that's going to bring out. It didn't bring out a whole pile on Steak Knife. So will Operation Denton bring anything new to light? We don't think so.
Really?
No.
I mean, are the Brits ever going to apologise? We can't even send back... I won't go down that road.
Yeah.
But we also waiting on Marie Anderson, who's the police ombudsman for Northern Ireland. She's doing an investigation into the police service, the RUC as it was.
Yeah.
Now the police service of Northern Ireland. But she can't investigate anything other than the police. She can't investigate the army, the UVF, the UDA, UDR, any, you know, all she can investigate is the RUC. What is that going to prove? We know they were involved, by the way. We know. Like, these are all investigations basically into the Glenan gang, who were responsible for the Dublin and Monaghan bombings. But, I mean, we know there was 40 plus members in that gang. Now, the Glenan is the farm that where all the arms and ammunition in Armagh, where all that stuff, James Mitchell's farm, where all this stuff was being gathered. And but we know we can name those that were involved, or a lot of them who were involved.
Yeah. Have been named.
Have been named, yeah. Have been named, and Leith Lalla is estate in denial. Yeah. Like, On Quiet Graves film. We have another film coming out now, by the way, if I just can have a moment to
go on,
tell
go
you
on.
About it. May 17, 1974. It's a film. Both Sharon and myself are involved. We have been interviewed in it. And it's about the families of the Dublin Monaghan bombings. And it's on in the Lighthouse Cinema in Smithfield on the 10th of May, Friday, at 8 o'clock. It's also on the 16th of May in the IFI Cinema in Eustace Street. It's on the Derry Nerve Centre on the 17th of May, the actual anniversary. And it's in the Garage Theatre in Monaghan Town on Friday, the 24th of May.
Okay.
So that's May 17, 74.
Aidan, what about the guards here and the Irish government?
Brendan, you're asking the questions that we've, you know... John Boucher has been looking for information that the guards might have had in his investigation. Marie Anderson has been looking for cooperation from the guards here. What have they got? Absolutely zilch. Nothing. Not one paper has been handed over by the guards.
Paul, it feels to me like Have you given up hope of getting some kind of resolution to this that's satisfactory to you?
No, we'll not give up hope. There's always hope. We'll keep carrying on, but you feel like you're
walking into
a brick wall each time.
Yeah, everyone agrees with that. Yeah.
You think you're getting forward and you're knocked back, but we'll keep going.
I think they're waiting for everybody to either die or lose interest. They're probably thinking, you know, everybody's getting older now, that generation.
But yeah.
We're very an odd generation to do our fighting.
They're winning that battle too, by the way. Yeah. Because unfortunately, I can see
you're going nowhere until you get answers here.
Well.
Okay, listen, that's it's very stark. Thank you for sharing all that with us, and I hope that you do get more of the answers and indeed the apologies, because as you say, we saw what the apology did for the people in Stardust. Like, these things might not seem to matter hugely to a lot of people. We can't understand why it would matter, but it would matter so much.
Yeah.
So Aidan Shields and Sharon and Paul Askin, thank you all so much. And indeed, my sympathies to you all and the other families ahead of this anniversary. The six-part radio series The Forgotten from Barry Lenehan and Kieran O'Connor starts at 6:30 p.m. this Tuesday evening here on Radio 1. It continues on May 8th, 9th, 13th, 14th and 15th, and it will also be available wherever you get your podcasts. Aidan, Paul, Sharon, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We'll take a break.
Thank you.
Email brendan@rte.ie.